The Guardian.
Day 11 in South Africa, Iberian delirium, as Villa scores one of the goals of the tournament and Portugal perform long-awaited disarmament of North Koreans, 7-0, leaving Kim Jong-il. Meanwhile, in other one-sided news, Fabio cracks down on England rebels. After JT gave it to us straight from the horse's mouth, it turns up in his bed at Rustenburg. The pod reflects and reviews and ruminates on what awaits on Tuesday as two whole World Cup groups reach their denouement. Can the hosts stay in the cup? What are Argentina going to do to Greece? And what's the latest on France ahead of their must-win game? Will Dominic go with two strikers or all 23? All that and more in tonight's World Cup Daily. Hello, world. Big Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, personable Paolo Bandini.
Barry's not that big.
He's not that big, is he? I'm saying in kind of, you know, reputational terms.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Paolo Bandini and Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James.
All on the panel tonight. On the way, we're going to be hearing from Sid's dog, Philippe Auclair, out of France Football, and Niren Tolsoy in Johannesburg, and some of his chums out on the streets, you know, keeping it real. It's been a big day in the World Cup. David Villa's goal, Paolo Bandini.
It was quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah, in a word, in a sound.
Ooh.
I was going with woof, Jacob.
Boom.
Boom, yeah. Can one sound encapsulate that goal? See, in a little bit, we talked to Sid, and I'm really excited about this goal. He's not as excited as I am.
How do you know?
Because we recorded it earlier.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sorry.
Sid had to walk the dog, and that comes first.
Yeah, I mean, it was this really special goal. He picked up the ball on the left, cut inside two defenders, then took it round a third.
He hurdled one. The leg was out. He just kind of slipped it past and then hurdles over the leg.
I don't know if anyone gets these moments. I was watching that goal and I just got this intense moment of, oh, please don't bloody miss it. Because you just think to yourself, that's going to be such a good goal. And if he misses it, it's just a total waste. It's like that Swiss one the other day where he didn't get the finish. I find it quite painful until the ball's in the net. You've got to score that now. Otherwise, it's a total waste.
You've been in watching Italy too much.
I think I probably have, yeah.
I think Sergio Mendoza, the Honduran fullback, would be very glad that game was over because he had a terrible time of it tonight. You could actually see the fear in his eyes after about 10 minutes when he realised what he was in for, and there wasn't really much of a let up by Spain until they kind of took their foot off the pedal with about 10 minutes to go, but they missed enough chances to win about 10 World Cups in that game. They could live to rue some of their misses. Villa, of course, missed a penalty as well.
Yes.
They also seem to have a few shaky moments at the back, I thought. They sort of gifted them a few little half chances to Honduras, and against Chile are a good attacking side. That could come back to haunt them if they continue like that at the back.
Certainly could do. We'll be getting on to the Monday action. Some very special goals scored in the course of day 11. First, though, quick look at news headlines from the World Cup.
Bong.
For the first time ever, FIFA could be forced to use Article 39 and draw lots to determine who qualifies from World Cup groups. The regulation has existed for many years but never been needed until perhaps now, because a number of teams in each section could finish level on points, goal difference and goals scored, as well as matches between themselves, raising the spectre of Sepp Blatter sticking his hand into a big pot containing lots of paper notes, something that certainly doesn't happen all the time.
Bong.
And more trouble for France, with Prime Minister Nicolas Sarkozy speaking out over the French players' bad behaviour. Sponsors have begun to drop the scandal-hit team like ash from their gitan. Crédit Agricole have guillotined their big-budget TV campaign with the players, while fast food company Quick axed their commercial with Nicolas Anelka. Funny, because the food is almost as revolting as the players are. That's just my opinion, not that of Guardian Media Group or anything
other
like that.
Other fast food outlets are available.
Indeed. And with
bong.
That... Yeah, thanks. Bong. That
oh,
was it.
Oh, that That's, was it.
We're all bonged out. Hey, speaking of bongs, Paolo Bandini, on an entirely tangential note...
I'm slightly worried about where this is going.
But some people were saying that was a really crazy celebration that the Italians did after De Rossi's rather dramatic goal the other day. And is it the first Vuvuzela? It looked like a blowback to me. How would you explain it?
Well, I couldn't possibly understand what you're talking about there, James.
Have the Italians offered any explanation?
No, I haven't seen any particular explanation. I have to admit, I haven't looked for an explanation. I think the Italian press were perhaps otherwise engaged talking about issues that seemed to them more pressing than goal celebrations after the game yesterday. But yeah, no, it was interesting. It was an eyebrow raiser, wasn't it? I mean, the commentator instantly went for Vuvuzela, but it didn't. I don't know. Did you normally stick a Vuvuzela to someone else's mouth and blow into it? It was a bit of a strange one.
I was enjoying the myriad high octane thrills and spills of the Vauxhall Park summer fair yesterday afternoon.
Really?
So I missed the Italian goal and have no idea what you're talking about.
Right, those mistakes. There's no telling when there'll be another one along. but anyway, never mind. Spain. Let's begin with them. Of course, Portugal. Big news today. We'll be on to them in a second. First, though, Sid Lowe live from the almost live from the offices of Gol TV in Barcelona. Sid. What was the reaction there at Gol Barcelona?
The reaction was that Spain should have got more goals, that there was a frustration, I think, at the chances they missed. And also because, exactly as we were talking about, James, I think last week, that possibility of a two-way or even three-way tie at the top of the Spanish group settled by goal difference is really genuine now. And so I think as the second half progressed, there was a sense of, oh my God, how can we not be 3-4, maybe even 5-0 up in this situation? And I think that is the one thing that concerns them. I think there's a satisfaction, not only at the result, which is obviously the most important thing, getting the victory, but there's a satisfaction too at the fact that Spain had perhaps the intensity, the aggression and the attacking intent in the first half that they maybe didn't have against Switzerland, that they created a lot of very clear chances, which again, they didn't do against Switzerland. And I think, generally speaking, it's satisfaction, but just tinged with a little bit of regret.
Yeah, often the nicest way, you know, a bit of bittersweetness, I think. What about, though, David Villa's goal?
Yeah, it's brilliant, wasn't it? Although, the one thing that has been said, actually, is that he did have Xavi and Akers of space and perhaps should have passed it, but I think that's perhaps a little bit harsh, considering how good it turned out to be. And it was interesting as well, because it was David Villa's goal coming from a position that is new under Vicente del Bosque, which is Villa coming inside from the left-hand side of a front three, but isn't new under Luis Aragonés. This was very much a Luis Aragonés formation in terms of having three up front, and that was the way, of course, of finding a space for Fernando Torres. Now, I thought Torres tonight was very, very wasteful. I think obviously there's no doubt about that. That's not my opinion. I'm sure everyone saw that. But that he does help Villa. He does give Villa a little bit of freedom of movement. He gives him some physical support up front. And I think one of the big myths about Spain's style is that they score goals because they get the ball wonderfully. Well, on occasion, and certainly if you look at the goals in the European Championships, they score goals because they're able to impose themselves on teams. And I think without Torres, certainly as they attack, they're maybe not able to do that. Tonight they were able to do that a little bit more.
Mm. But Sid, the goal, I mean, it was one of the greatest ever World Cup goals, wasn't it?
Oh, well, I must say that's slightly further than I would have gone, but I thought it was a wonderful goal coming in from the left-hand side, stepped away from a couple of challenges. I wonder if the ball was ever so slightly running away from him at the end, which is why he launched to strike it. But yeah, it was an absolutely brilliant goal. And it wouldn't be the first time that I told you that I think that David Villa is a genuinely special footballer.
Right. Okay, excellent. Jacob, you have a question?
Yeah, Sid, I was just wondering, I thought that their team was a bit odd with still the two deep line midfielders. Do you think that they're playing the best possible team at the moment from that squad?
Well, I think that's the one question mark that everyone in Spain has got, because there is a belief that when you've got Xavi Alonso, you can't necessarily have another player in that same position. In other words, Xavi Alonso and Busquets, it's almost a waste. There's almost not much need for both of them. Personally, no, I don't think they have the best team, although I have to say I thought Sergio Busquets was superb tonight, the best I've seen him play for Spain by a long, long way. I don't think they need both of them, certainly against teams like Honduras, and I think at some stage we may see that slip away. But that's the way Vicente del Bosque has played since he took over. He's always wanted two men in there, not just one. That means no place for Cesc Fabregas, and it has tended to mean no place for two forwards. Today, as to say, we found a compromise solution which enabled that to happen.
Sid, that's not your dog there in the background, is it?
It is the dog.
Aye. And what are the pair of you doing at Gol TV tonight?
Well, I'm just on my way home now.
Ah, okay. What have you been doing at Gol TV tonight?
Well, I've been in. I don't know what you'd call it in TV terms. I suppose the office. And now I've.
But commentating or what? Or making tea?
No, we run a programme that's kind of a discussion show every night, and I've just been in to watch the games with them tonight, because I'm not on set tonight, I will be tomorrow.
Oh, right, okay, excellent. All right, final question then. How worried are the Spanish about the final game against Chile?
They're concerned in that they know they have to win it. But I think they feel that tonight they've got their World Cup underway, and that's the most important thing. I think they believe that Chile might be good for them because Chile will open up and attack them in a way that obviously Switzerland didn't. And there was a real concern after the Switzerland game that it might not just be Switzerland, that there might be a trend here of teams closing up and that it would be difficult for Spain to open them up.
Sid, more of that anon. Off you go and enjoy your ice cream. And thanks for speaking to us.
My pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers, Sid. Sid Lowe in Spain. Group H then, Chile on top with 6 points. Spain just behind them on 3 points. Tied with Switzerland. Spain's goal difference is one better. And Honduras there, bottom with nil point. Chile, of course, beating Switzerland earlier on Monday. Looking around to see who saw this game. Barry, yeah?
Yeah, I saw it. Yep. I'm falling in love with the Chilean football team.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't such a classic performance today.
Ah, but they're great. I mean, they were 1-0 up against Switzerland with 5 minutes to go, and they were still pouring men forward as if they were the team in dire need of a goal, not as opposed to
well,
the
they
Swiss.
Almost were. Paredes missed that absolute sitter to make it 2-0. And 30 seconds later, Dirdjok should have made it 1-1.
Dirdjok, that will haunt him to the grave. It was basically from the penalty spot. All he had to do was slot the ball home. Pretty straightforward effort and managed to put it wide. And I would imagine he'd be lying awake thinking about that for many nights to come.
He could have rained on their Paredes.
That one and the one he missed against Spain after doing all the hard work.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Switzerland, well, it could all come down, probably will come down to goal difference. Yeah. Would you miss them if they go out?
Well, Switzerland had this incredible record that they broke this game, which is, I think it was 558 minutes without conceding a World Cup goal.
9 hours and 18 minutes, which might well be the same thing.
Yeah, I believe it is. Mm. So... they're not exactly exciting to watch. I mean, that you have to admire it, and you have to admire it all the more for the fact that Philip Senderos is part of it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I don't think Switzerland have set the tournament alight. I mean, obviously it was very exciting watching them beat Spain. They're going through a ragey game, but they certainly have some reason to feel hard done by it in a sense after this game, because Berami sending off was pretty scandalous.
Do you think?
Well, I have to admit, I saw it probably less times than you did. I only saw, you know, as it was live and then one quick replay, but it didn't look to me like he certainly didn't look like he'd put an elbow in the guy's face.
He turned round and he sort of turned round and had a look at him, and he hit him in the face a couple of times.
Yeah,
second time he turned round, had a little look, and the elbow came out.
I mean, the player definitely made a lot of it, but
this seems to be happening loads now over the last few days. You know, the Keita against Brazil, getting Kaká sent off, and even during this game, the Barami sending off wasn't an isolated incident. I think there was a one where the Switzerland player, I think Van Bergen, went down in the area, and now it's just getting tedious to watch all these players going down pretending they've been hit in the face.
There was a moment in the Honduras-Spain game where the Honduran left back Izaguirre got a cuff in the while there were players were milling around in the penalty area waiting for a free kick to come in from the right, you know, all the pushing and tugging and pulling that goes on. He stamped on David Villa's is it Villa or Villa? I can never remember.
Villa.
Yeah. David Villa's foot. So Villa sort of gently cuffed him on the face, which, you know, is technically a sending off offence. He could have got a red card for that, but didn't, because the referee didn't see what happened. And then after he'd cuffed Aguero put his hand to his mouth and then waited, I think, 8-9 seconds before actually hitting the deck and rolling around.
He tried his best to stay standing. Commendable. The referee, though, in that Chile-Switzerland game, was it 9 yellows and a red card from Khalil Alhamdi? Fantastic stuff. Is that? I think that is a tournament record, isn't it? Although there was obviously the chap the other day.
Germany game, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Good. Anyway, well, there you go. It's all looking very tight in Group H. Meantime, we saw action in Group G as well. To be specific, Portugal destruction of North Korea. 7-0, and not bad for a team that couldn't score goals, by most people's appraisal. Indeed, by our own appraisal, let's be frank, here in the pod yesterday. Indeed, Brunovsky saying, Greg, roughly, North Korea hold on to the ball well. These are quotes from Greg. They're well organised. Whoops, a bit of a giveaway there. And they won't get a good hiding. Ha ha ha, the boy knows nothing. Hope AC Jimbo nails you for that one, or maybe not. He predicted a draw. Well, Greg had the good grace to post in and say, "I know how Michael Fish felt in 1987." But to be fair, who saw this one coming?
Yeah, I assure you, I don't think people would have seen it coming even halfway through the first half when Korea, for a brief period, Korea actually first looked like they were dominating. Yep. If anything, I mean, there were a couple of chances they had. You know, where you thought actually they were going to take the lead, and I'm pretty sure if you look back at the minute by minute, I'm pretty sure that's what Rob was saying as well at the time, and it suddenly turned with that goal. Like the second half, I remember seeing at the beginning of the second half, all the North Koreans were out and they're having their little huddle, and you thought, okay, we'll see if there's some spirited fight back coming, but just wasn't at all. What happened was they just completely fell apart.
Yeah, and once that first goal came, goal porn, as many people called it. Mm. Yeah, it was just relentless. It was just, well, there's seven goals. Ronaldo, that marvelous kind of one where he carried it on the back of his neck.
Do you think he meant that?
No.
Because there were some people trying to claim that he'd done sort of the, who's the little Brazilian guy, Curlon, that seal dribble.
Oh, yeah.
But it was still great skill to react when it came down.
Absolutely,
when it came down.
Well, he had a very good second half, didn't he?
I'd like to make a defence of Cristiano Ronaldo, because I realise he's very, very irritating. but he's been getting a lot of criticism for the way he's been playing, especially today. I think we'll see probably in today's papers. But he has all the time. He's got three players all the time, every time he gets the ball, defending against him, which logically means that there's other Portugal players in loads of space. And that's what we saw with Morales coming through. Cristiano Ronaldo is the best counter-attacking player in the world because he's so fast. And that's what happened in the second half. He got loads of space. And he just punished them time and time again.
Do you know what I thought was important was that they got the fullbacks involved. And I think that was really big, because I know that there was a bit of a rant went on in a couple of the Portuguese sort of news stations, I think, after the first game, about not getting the fullbacks enough involved. And Coentrão on the left in particular sort of really was getting forward and putting balls across. And he put across one fantastic goal for the game. You know, it was actually, I think even his club manager, Jorge Jesus, is supposed to have had a big go about Queiroz about not using him enough. So clearly, you know, whether or not it was the player or whether it was the manager or whether it was just the fact they're playing North Korea and he felt like he was free to get forward where he wasn't against Ivory Coast, you could see that having some thrust up the wings there did them good.
Jimbo, watching that game today was probably the first time I've ever sort of agreed with your theory that players or teams, you know, once you get 3 or 4 nil up, you should stop.
Oh, right.
Particularly because I'm genuinely worried that some of those North Koreans are going to be slung in prison or executed when they get home after shipping a 7-0 hiding.
But didn't they show the game live in North Korea?
They've ever shown a game live.
What happened when it went to sort of 2 or 3?
Well, apparently they showed the whole thing, and they said at the end, Portugal are now on 4 points, and that's where our transmission ends. I don't know. I saw that reported somewhere, but yeah, it's a singularly unfortunate game to choose as your first. Although, spectacular match. Mm. Yeah.
But I don't agree with that. I think that they should just continue, because now Ivory Coast need a 9-goal swing to go through. So
that's a big swing, isn't it?
That is a big swing.
I'm sure with Sven-Goran Eriksson at the helm, they could manage that. He's a very attack-minded coach.
Yeah. All right. Is this going to be a turning point for Portugal?
I think even with the possibility of players like Kaká not being there, and you wonder if Brazil will, you know, might try a little rotation, I still think I'd imagine Brazil are going to beat them.
But do you think?
Yeah, I think so. But I could be wrong.
Brazil are through, aren't they?
They are through.
Yeah. It's really a question of first place and second place. Okay. Although, of course, the thing that gets thrown into the mixer now as well is the possibility that Spain could finish second in their group. And then you don't want to finish top of this group, because then you could end up playing Spain.
Which group plays first?
Brazil's. No, they're on the same day, actually.
Brazil.
Yeah,
play
but
first.
One plays in the afternoon.
I think Brazil
and
play
in
first.
Okay.
Yeah. It would do.
I think
all right.
So.
Okay. Credit to Thomas Stafford, who actually made the King John Ill pun, which I nicked for the intro. And there you go. And of course, Portugal playing Brazil later on this week, which should be a cracker. Very, very exciting day's worth of action then on Monday. One or two posts. Hey, speaking of Brazil, the cyclist wants to know, why can Brazil get away with murder on the pitch and still have the whole world drooling over them? Everywhere you look, Fabiano's two goals are heralded as fantastic strikes, with a slight addendum that, well, the second one happened to be played with his arms. And he goes on and gets quite emotional about this.
There was
He then talks about Kaká clearly raising his elbow and not Keita in the chest. This blank apologetism, which is an interesting new word, which I'm dying to use, for Brazil is just pathetic. I don't agree about the Kaká thing. He braces himself because a player is burning down on him at speed, and he just...
there's absolutely no question. He didn't raise his elbow to...
But has there been an angle where, from the back, which has shown whether or not he has actually put his elbow out? Because it's all been... You haven't quite been able to see it have you? I think.
It's Kaká. I mean...
A man of God.
Well, yeah. Dublin 4, though, backs the cyclist up with his business of Luis Fabiano. And why isn't he being vilified a la Thierry Henry?
I quite enjoyed his response today because he sort of came out and said, yes, I handballed it, which, you know, right up there with the declaration he'll make tomorrow about the earth being round. But the follow-up to that was... But this only, it was something along the lines of this only makes it more special. You know, right. It was such a special goal. This is how it has to be in a World Cup. And you're thinking, well, fair enough, I suppose. It's less boring than just saying, yeah, I feel really bad about it. But
Jan Boris says one of his Austrian papers said Brazil through to the next round with Samba, while the other Austrian daily went with Brazil through without Samba. Who is right? Discuss. Not sure we've got time for that. But he does also ask us to play the Samba clip, which they play on Hedge Globo every time Brazil score. And can we play it every time Fernando Duarte says Brazil? And so we'll definitely do that next time we get Fernando on, because it's great. I love that too. Now, True Maltese posts him with an explanation of how going on a salary-free holiday with your boss during your hard-earned vacation time isn't likely to make you best disposed to the whole experience. And he's basically talking about England, which brings us on nicely to Capello and his putting down of the putsch. Some great quotes coming out on Monday night regarding the complaints that had been raised by England's brave John Terry. On Sunday, Capello says Terry made big mistakes. There's a lovely picture here in the front of the Guardian sports section on Tuesday with Capello laughing and grinning with all the England players there on their knees in front of him. So, a very happy choice of picture, that one. But anyway, Capello basically just says, look, what does he say? You saw the...
Well, he said that John Terry's press conference, or the comments he made during the press conference, was a very big mistake. And basically slapped down Terry and put him back in his box firmly. I mean, when I saw the Terry press conference and he was giving it the big I am, and, you know, I won't think twice about saying anything that hard things that need to be said to the manager. I'll have no problem doing it. And I was sort of thinking to myself, good luck with that, John, because I would imagine he would get incredibly short shrift for piping up like that. But it turns out that Capello said, no, Terry didn't say anything to him. And so it was, you know, just talk.
Lampard said it as well. He said Terry didn't say anything.
So. Yeah, that they had the meeting, and the meeting consisted of watching the first half of the Algeria game, and Capello saying, go to bed.
I mean, I think we already knew this, but John Terry looks even more of an idiot.
The thing is that, I mean, everyone expected Capello to react in much that way, but the notion that John Terry was peddling was that it wasn't just going to be him. It was going to be a consensus among the team that Capello would have had to either deal with or really force a confrontation.
Well, no, then this on Monday morning we see all the papers come out and say that all the players were furious with him. All the sort of the nine people who had the one beer with him, the likes of Wayne Rooney and Frank Lampard, and suddenly John Terry seems to be out on his own.
Yeah,
which is good.
Well, of course he can't drop him, can he? Which Capello might
do.
Can he?
Well. I wouldn't say he's indefensible, is he?
I was talking to Scott Murray earlier today, and we reckoned what would be really amusing is if Capello picked him and then after about 5 minutes just put the board up and took him off.
All right, moving right along then. On Tuesday, we have Group A and Group B reaching their denouement. Group A, of course, Uruguay and Mexico tied on 4 points, and with a draw, they can both go through when they face each other, Uruguay and Mexico. However, that would mean Mexico facing the winners of Group B, which is probably going to be Argentina. Well, no, it's definitely going to be Argentina, I think, by this point. So Mexico presumably aren't going to go along with that plan. So there's a possibility they'll both go for the victory there. Anyway, this is all good news for France, who are the big story, of course, of Group A. But after the past few days, who can be sure what kind of team they're going to be putting out? Which kind of players are going to be available for Dominic, and in what state of mind? To hear more about them, let's now speak to France football correspondent Philippe Auclair. First off, France, and it's all taken a rather unfortunate turn there for Les Bleus. What's the latest on the unrest in the side?
The latest is that there was a press conference by Raymond Domenech this evening, to which he came alone. Patrice Evra decided not to face the press, the media, and Dominic explained that he didn't want basically to give explanations from the media. He wanted to give his answer on the pitch. And so Dominic did as he always did, as he always does, which is he batted away the questions and gave his own versions of the very strange scenes on Sunday. You will remember Dominic coming out after this long meeting with the French squad, holding this statement and reading it to the press. And then he said basically he had done it because he wanted to stop the farce, which is quite remarkable.
Mm.
And he said, but I never agreed with their attitude, and the decision to send Anelka home was right, and so forth. And, well, he also prepared, I think, the French public for what is going to happen against South Africa by saying that the players had left a lot of energy in the events of the previous 48 hours, and I could add maybe of the past 4 years, maybe.
Yeah.
And that obviously people shouldn't expect anything extraordinary, but he'll still be there and he'll pick the team. And of course, the question now is, what team is it going to be? Because is he going to make a statement for what could and probably should be his last game in charge of France? Is he going to leave out some of the so-called senior players who have made his job almost impossible this time around in South Africa? That's the question.
Mm. Well, it's all amid a backdrop of increasing outrage there in the French press, and indeed in all
and
aspects.
Politicians.
Of, yeah.
Politicians as well. Today, everybody has had his word or her word to say about what's happening to Les Bleus, the ministers, the MPs, the European MPs. Everybody has had something to say about it. And none of it was very good, it has to be said.
What kind of reaction do you think they're going to get when they step off the plane at Charles de Gaulle or wherever? Are we going to see tomatoes?
Maybe they will go to a military airport instead. Ooh. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're going to fly back to Ouassi. I think that the reception is going to be absolutely appalling. I mean, there's not going to be any reception whatsoever. The mood in France is actually... I know it's easy to poke fun at France for and see that as poetic justice for what happened against Ireland in November, but to be honest, what people feel is not just frustration and anger, but there's a lot of grief as well at what has happened to the team, and the fact that this team, which federated people in a way that maybe no other team had done in France in the past, that was just a few years ago after they won the World Cup and the European Championships, has now become a symbol of everything that is wrong about the country.
It's an interesting point. Actually, one of our listeners, Jose Canseco, posting in and saying, the only reason I'm reserving my schadenfreude over the France debacle is that far-right political groups have made the largely non-white makeup of this team a major political issue.
I have to say that in private, I've heard loads of very strange comments from people that I wouldn't have necessarily expected to express themselves in such a view. The fact that the team is obviously it's now there's a majority of West Indian and African players within the 23. It is now a fact which is established within the French team. If the team was winning, believe me, that probably wouldn't be a problem, except with the people from the National Front and so forth. The attitude of the players. I mean, if you put yourself in the French perspective, the image that people have got of the young, not immigrants, but the young people who come from the banlieue, some of whom are actually white, and which is why Franck Ribéry is very much part of that generation, and he's actually put in the same bag, so to speak. The attitude which is seen as, we don't respect anything, we only think about ourselves, we only think about money, we don't have any sense of duty, discipline, nationhood, and so forth, which are all the things that people say is the big, big problem with this lost generation in the banlieue, is what you can see in that team. And so you and this is where they come from. They come from the banlieue. Most of these players do. The number of comments there have been about players not singing the national anthem, or Eric Abidal actually waving at the camera while the Marseillaise was being played, I've heard so much of that, and people comparing it to the attitude of other nations, you know, the Koreans, the Americans, probably the English as well, when their national anthem is being sung. And saying, well, this is a symptom of what is wrong, not just with the team, but with the country as a whole, and that's what we want to get rid of. We want to get rid of this selfish attitude. We want to get rid of this attitude which demands respect, so to speak, but never gives it.
Philippe, what does the French public want now? Do they want them to come home as swiftly as possible so that they can just start again? Laurent Blanc can start with a clean page? Or would they actually like to see them stay in with this?
To be honest, I think everybody's so sick and tired of the whole business that the sooner they come home, the better it will be. What can they hope? I mean, one what we've seen anyway, absolutely nothing. I know Zinedine Zidane said that he was still hoping that France would get to the final, but I mean, that was very much with, I mean, his tongue very firmly in his cheek when he said that. I think people are expecting France to not to qualify, which honestly it would take an absolute miracle for them to qualify. And also they want Laurent Blanc to be starting in his new job as soon as possible. Which, maybe not as paradoxically as it sounds, is going to be maybe easier than it would have been if it had been half a failure, if you see what I mean.
Mm.
He's now arriving in a building site which is actually covered with ruins. And it's now up to him to be the architect and to rebuild from the bottom. But it's going to be a different team, probably a bit fresher, with some players who have got an awful, awful lot to prove. And for whom it is an occasion to show that they've got some pride. And the team is by no means as united in its condemnation of Anelka's exclusion as has been indicated in this statement. And at least one of them, who is Djibril Cissé, was seen in tears apologizing to members of the staff in the evening. So it's a very strange atmosphere.
Wow.
And I can understand why people say that France hasn't got a chance against South Africa. But South Africa is a mediocre team, which can only be, you know, be taken so far by the enthusiasm of the fans.
Well, you never know. It's been a World Cup of surprises. Listen, yeah. Philippe, thank you so much for that. A fascinating
you.
Roundup on the very disappointing situation with Les Bleus. And here's to happier days.
World Cup Daily Live with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Just to clarify there, France need Uruguay and Mexico not to draw, and France themselves need to win by 5 clear goals against South Africa. Uruguay and Mexico, as we mentioned, the story there being that Mexico having a worse goal difference, if they do draw and go through with Uruguay, they'll probably be facing Argentina in the next round. If they go for it, those two, are they going to go for it?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think certainly I'd hope they would, because when those two teams both go for it, they're both very entertaining teams. But, you know, it's a question of whether Mexico think avoiding Argentina is enough worth their bother, because I'm sure Uruguay would be perfectly happy to roll the ball around gently and just keep possession and not try anything too difficult.
Mm. All right. Well, shortly we'll be hearing from the mood out there on the streets of Johannesburg ahead of the France-South Africa game in Group B, meanwhile.
Does this going to involve Sean Ingle running around?
There's no
shouting.
Sean Ingle involved. Sean's coming up, though, on Tuesday's pod.
Oh, really?
We'll look forward to what Slovenia have in store for England's brave John Terry and friends. But in the meantime, Group B, the other group that's finishing on Tuesday, Argentina are playing Greece, South Korea play Nigeria. The group at the moment has Argentina on 6 points, South Korea and Greece on 3 points, both with minus one goal difference, and Nigeria on nil point. Greece then, the draw may not be enough for them, and you might think that they'd be lucky to even get the draw against Argentina. The good news is, though, that Argentina are probably going to be playing their reserves. The bad news, though, being that those reserves are called things like Aguero and Diego Milito. So,
A bit better than Emil Heskey.
Yes, Argentina can afford to lose this match by a two-goal margin and still reach the last 16. In a World Cup of surprises, any chance for the Greeks?
No.
All right, then. All right, then. Nigeria, I think, need to win with South Korea and hope that Argentina win. I think that would put them through. That's right, isn't it? If they score enough goals, that would put them on 3 points. Yeah, that would, yeah. Barry's consulting his notes. Excellent. Well, anyway, we mentioned South Africa and the fact that their very own World Cup may soon be proceeding without them, which is sad, isn't it? So to conclude tonight, having first of all said thanks very much to producer Jason, to Barry, to Jacob.
Thank you.
And to Paolo Bandini.
Cheers.
And to you, the listener. You're welcome. Let's hear the thoughts of Guardian and Mail correspondent Niren Tulsi and some of the Bafana Bafana supporters there in Johannesburg. Speak to you tomorrow.
I'm sitting here in a coffee shop on Jaspers Avenue, which is one of the main roads going through Rosebank and Johannesburg. And there aren't very many flags on cars. There are no vuvuzelas being blown. Unlike a week and a half ago where, even prior to Simpiwe Shabalala's phenomenal goal against Mexico, people were blowing vuvuzelas out the back of delivery vans, taxi drivers were racing around the city hooting their horns and blowing vuvuzelas, and it's the mood's really gone down. I think it's a lot more depressing and despondent than it was, which is in keeping with our national psyche, a little bit vacillating between sort of euphoric and utter depression. We're quite schizophrenic that way.
What I think about Bafana, they lose a lot. Yeah, they should win. They're gonna lose against France. They are.
I feel very depressed because I was expecting it since well that the World Cup is happening in my country. It's taking place in my country. I was expecting them to do better, you know.
My expectation, especially after speaking to some of the players and listening to the coach after the Uruguay match, was that our national sort of mood would lift. Their sense was, look, we're going to go all out for it, do or die. But what's happened since then is that, especially over the weekend, there have been media reports around factions and rifts within the camp, province-based, and also a sense among some players that there's a degree of favoritism by Carlos Alberto Pereira. These sort of leaks coming out of the camp could possibly be attributed to SAFA administration itself. My sense is that these leaks coming out of the weekend have a lot to do with the administration attempting to deflect the focus away from their own shortcomings. Bloemfontein is a singular, supreme football-supporting crowd. There's no other football crowd like them in the country. The atmosphere will be electric despite the despondency in the streets now. And I think the players can only be buoyed by what's happening with the French team. I mean, they really don't look like they want to be here. They look like they're a bunch of petulant individuals rather than a footballing team. And if we go in there, especially with two strikers, if the coach can change things around a little bit, bring in two strikers, I think we can at least... It'll depend, obviously, on what happens in Mexico, Uruguay, but at the very least, we can go out with our heads held high.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.